The Dirty Dozen, Ireland's motorsport legends in conversation with John Kenny. This week, Rosemary Smith.
It's Kenya only this year for the East African Safari Motor Rally. It's still the toughest four-day rally in the world, over three legs designed to test to the limit the ruggedness, the speed and the stamina of cars and drivers. Of the 99 starters, only 16 finish. Finally, it's Joginder Singh's Mitsubishi Lancer, which comes in first. Ireland's Rosemary Smith, the last to finish, and the winner, Joginder Singh.
Rosemary Smith competing in the African Safari Rally. During the 1960s, Rosemary Smith was the leading female driver in the world, winning ladies' titles on the likes of the RAC and Monte Carlo rallies. Her biggest accolade came in 1965, when she won the Tulip Rally outright, for which she won the Texaco Superstar of the Year award. Rosemary Smith began by recalling her childhood years.
Well, looking back on it, it was a very happy childhood. Innocent. We lived in Rathfarnham. I went to Loretto in Beaufort in Rathfarnham. And school and myself never really got on too much. I enjoyed the things I could do with my hands and so on, but unfortunately the old brain power wasn't the best, and I just really didn't get on too well with the nuns. And the day that the head nun, the principal, told my father that his beloved daughter was stupid was the day I left school, and I was only 15, and that was a bad mistake on my dad's part. I mean, I should either have been taken away from that school and sent to another one, but I wasn't. I just left school at 15, which was far too young. They sent me to the Grafton Academy. I did a design course, and then I opened a very small business, which my mum and the man who subsequently became my stepdad, they financed, and it was in South Ann Street.
Was it a big family?
No, I had one sister, Pamela, who was the eldest, and my brother, Roger, he was the middle, and I was the so-called baby. But I was totally different to the other two, because Pamela was small and dainty and very pretty. Roger was, you know, brainy, clever, one of these people that everybody liked automatically. And then I was the afterthought, and I was very tall from a very early age, and blonde and, you know, blue-eyed and skinny. And I remember hearing my mother say one day, oh, well, I'm not really going to worry about Rosemary after all. She'll grow up, get married and live happily ever after. And that was the sort of attitude.
The plan, wasn't it?
Yes, because Pamela was brainy. She went on to college and she did all sorts of things. Roger was very bright and very good artist. He did a lot of, a lot of stuff. I think he really, though he was very keen on engineering and mechanics, and he was very good putting cars together and that sort of thing, because my dad was in the motor trade. He basically, I think, would have probably liked to have been an architect. Anyway, he went into my father's garage, and that's what he did.
And did you have any interest in cars yourself? Were you driving at the time?
Well, I started when I was 11, let me hastily add, in a field. And my dad would have lots of old bangers of cars around. I really loved it. It was, you know, a way of getting out and about and doing things. And Roger and myself spent hours and hours and hours driving around this field that we had up near Talla. And I remember it was such a big old car. I think it was a Vauxhall or something like that. But it was just something I enjoyed, and it came quite naturally to me. But I'm going back to this thing, my hands and my feet. I was fine. I was always fine with that. It was the bit between the two ears that rather was my problem.
And you talked about setting up that small little business. What were you doing?
I was designing outfits for some of the quite well-known people around Dublin. And how that all came about was that after I left the Grafton Academy, you were meant to do a two-year course there. That was the usual thing. And I was there for about 9 months, and I'd done the entire course because I found it very easy. It was just second nature to me. Again, hands. Mm. And when I did the passing out parade at the end of that particular year, which the principal of the college did not want me to do at all, she said, you've only been here since September, and this was about the following May. And I just said, well, I'm going to do it. But as it happened, I won it outright that year as the most promising student. And I went in, I worked for a few companies, Irene Gilbert being one of them. I did a bit with Sybil Connolly, and then I went into a factory to learn the ins and outs of cutting cloth. And I remember we got some colossal orders on my designs. And I went to the woman who owned the factory and I said, you know, I've been here now for about, at that stage, about a year. And I was getting the princely sum of £2.88 a week. She said, I'll give you a halfpenny an hour more. So I said, well, thank you, but no, thank you. And I left after that. And then, as I say, my mom and subsequently my stepdad set me up in business in South Allen Street. And that's, you know, where it all started. And it was from that, because a woman came into me a number of times called Delphine Bigger, and her husband was Frank Bigger.
Yeah, this is an interesting story. This is how you actually got involved.
Yes, in the actual
in motor racing.
Motor racing end of it. Now, my dad raced, so I knew about it. My brother raced. So when this woman, she kept coming in and out for things that weren't really worn back then, like, as they called them, trousers. Women didn't wear trousers. And eventually she said to me, she said, oh, I'm going rallying this weekend. Now, I knew about racing. I didn't know about rallying. And I said, oh, great, you know, where are you going? And she said, Kilkenny. And I said, is this why you've been getting all these outfits made? Oh, yes, she said, I go all over Ireland and I rally here and I rally there. So she pointed a long manicured fingernail at me and she said, you will come to Kilkenny this weekend. Then I discovered after going on a few events with her that she actually was only going rallying, because even though she was married to one man, she was having an affair with another man. And she went on these events to meet the other man, because I was the scapegoat in the middle, which I didn't know for years afterwards.
And that first event, the story goes, is that she was driving, you were navigating, you got lost, or the pair of you got lost, you switched and you drove. And that was the first time.
Yes, because when we got lost on that very first event, it was about 3 miles into the rally. Every time I went around a corner, the map went around the corner, so I turned it upside down and sideways and back to front. And
3 miles isn't very far.
It wasn't. Well, we ended up literally up a boreen at a farm gate, which was firmly locked. And Delphine started using words that I'd never even heard before. So I was totally flummoxed. And she said, you know, get out, you stupid, stupid, stupid woman. That was the nice part of it. And she said, you drive and I'll navigate. So we did. And we happened to come in third in our class in that very first event. But before we got a mile from the finish, she said, stop. And we stopped. She hopped into the driving seat again. And I was meant to navigate into the finish. So we did that for about, a year and a half, I suppose. And
with you driving and then stopping?
Well,
did this continue, yes?
It did continue. And it didn't bother me because I just enjoyed it so much, that the fact that she was getting all this kudos, because we were winning everything we went in for. We were winning the class and we were winning so on. Even in the ladies' class in the Circuit of Ireland, the very first year we did it, there were something like 12 women's teams, which was incredible, including people like Pat Moss, Anne Hall, Annie Swabo, you know, all the big names, which I was only beginning to learn at that stage. And I think we ended up third in the class over all these people who'd been at it for years. Then we went to do the Circuit of Leinster, which was the following September, and I was driving. We had a Mini, and it was an all-night event, which, you know, I never liked them particularly. And September was a bad month because of the fog and the mist and so on. So we were coming down this road, 3 a.m. in the morning, and she said, we're coming up to a crossroads, straight through the crossroads. So dropped it down a gear and continued. But unfortunately, we were on the wrong road and turned out to be a T-end with a very hard stone wall at the end of it. And I just literally drove straight into it. And there was this awful silence. And I turned around to say, oh, gosh, sorry, Delphine. And I got the flash lamp, which was in the pocket of the car, and I put it up to look at her to discover that the top of her head was virtually gone. She'd been scalped basically on the windscreen, the visor, the sun visor, and it had just taken the top of her head off like this, and the flap of head was rolled over backwards, and the hair and all. And as I looked at her, the blood just started and it just gushed down her face. And I thought, see, panic was a thing that you have for a split second, but then the next thing that overrides that is, I've got to do something to help this woman. I've caused this. And the only thing I think of was to take the flap of skin and slap it back down on top of her head again, on her skull, basically. Now, I mean, now I sort of laugh at it, but it wasn't funny, I assure you. And then I looked around, there was a box of tissues, so I got those out of the box, planted that in her head. Then I found a scarf and I tied that tightly around her head and right around the back of her neck. And she was unconscious, of course. So what could I do then except get out and go looking for help? But the difficulty...
At 3 o'clock in the morning in the middle of nowhere.
A place very appropriately named Gore's Bridge. And it was freezing cold. The fog was right down. And I started to run down this road. And I fell over something which turned out to be a cow, a calf, sitting on the side of the road. And I kept running, absolutely silent, not a noise around. And because we were on the wrong road, of course, no other rally cars came along. So I just kept going. And eventually I saw a pinprick of a light. And it was an old farmhouse. And I bang, bang, bang on the door. And the dogs came rushing out. They were barking. And the next thing, this upstairs light went on. And I looked up. And all I could see was the nozzle of a shotgun down through the window. And the old farmer said, "Who's there? You know, stand back, don't you?" I said, "Don't shoot, please." I didn't realise myself that I was covered in blood at that stage because it never dawned on me. And he took one horrified look and he said, "Oh, I'll help, I'll help, I'll help." But the only thing he had was a cattle truck, and he'd been to the cattle mark that day. So you can imagine the state of the cattle truck. So we drove back up the road, got Delphine, and the poor man, he was actually sort of saying prayers over her at this stage. He was convinced she was dead. Got the door open. Got her into the truck, drove to it was a county hospital in those days. And when we got there, the matron came out and says, "There's nothing we can do for you. All the doctors have gone to a party from the hospital." We had to turn around and drive back into Carlo. And we drove into the town of Carlo and they were waiting for us because she'd rung through to say that this was serious. And I had a gash on the side of my face and they insisted on sewing that first before they even looked at Delphine, which I was really upset about. And then they turned their attention to Delphine. She had 49 stitches around the top of her head, but she lived to a ripe old age. I mean, she only died last year.
It's remarkable, isn't it? I mean, yeah. Considering the injuries you described.
Oh, she lost something like 9 pints of blood, and I believe you only have about 11 anyway. Mm. But she was lucky. But she, as I say, she was a big woman and she was strong, so it stood her in good stead.
But that didn't cure you of the love that you had for driving fast. I mean, you stayed with it.
I went back doing a few small events and then Delphine, she came out, she got better and so on. And then she decided that we'd go to the end of that particular year, but we would do the RAC in Great Britain. And such a grueling event that was. I mean, it's not like it is today. We drove day, night, day, night. It was awful. And it was one of the first years that we went in the forests. And of course, the Mini we used was so low to the ground, we ran number 173. So you can imagine going through the forest stages. And it was the most difficult event I think I ever did. But we got to the end and I think we were third in the ladies section again. And just before Christmas, I got a telegram from a woman in England called Sally Ann Cooper. She said, "Would I come and do the Monte Carlo rally with her?" That she was getting married in the following May and she wanted to do something exciting before she got married. It sounded very
odd. So were you starting to come to people's attention then from your exploits?
Well, yes, I suppose so, but I didn't realise it at all. I had absolutely no idea. I just went out because I really enjoyed it and I loved everything I did. And, you know, the fact that I was sort of tall and blonde and I did a bit of modelling as well, it sort of stood in good stead to me. But it didn't dawn on me that it would ever lead to anything else. But we did the Monte. We started in Glasgow. I drove most of the way. Sally Ann sat in the back with her picnic basket and her fur coat and waved to the crowds along the way. And another girl navigated me. And we got to Monte Carlo. And again, I think we were third or fourth in the class. And as I left the car, this man came over and he said, "Not will you." Again, another Delphine scene. "Not will you or would you like to," or anything else. He just said, "You are now going to be a member of our Works rally team." And that was Norman Garrett from the Roots Group, which is long defunct as well, you know. They were bought over by Chrysler years later. But and I said, "No, I'm not." And I said, "I'm sorry. I didn't like the snow and ice. I didn't like it. It was too long. It was too hazardous. And I'm going home now." And of course, when I got home, it was the first time I ever saw my father really, really annoyed with me. And he said, how could you be so stupid? And I think either he or my mum actually wrote to Norman Garrett and said, look, she was tired and so on. But, you know, I think she would really like to do it. And of course, by that stage, I'd got over all the tiredness and I only remember the good bits of it, not the bad bits.
Yeah, I can't beat hindsight, can you?
Exactly. So I got the letter back then saying, now you're a member of the Works Rally team. They were going to pay me, I think it was £2,000 a year plus expenses. And I mean, that was just phenomenal to be paid for something I really enjoyed. Was unbelievable. And then, of course, it was only years later I discovered that it was just that Norman fancied the look of me and thought a nice dolly bird on the team would be good for publicity, which he was quite right. Because one of the first things he did when I joined was to enter me for Le Mans for the 24-hour race. They never won in Le Mans. I mean, they weren't fast enough. They didn't finish a lot of the time. But in those days, women were not allowed to drive in Le Mans. And he knew that, but I didn't know that. You sign on and you do all these various things. Then you had to go in and have a medical. And he said, no, you cannot be here. You cannot drive here. You cannot drive. You're a woman and so on and so on. Because I went out and I told Norman what had happened. And Norman beamed from ear to ear. But unbeknownst again to me, he had about half a dozen journalists. And I think I was in every newspaper, every TV show, every radio interview, everything to all around the world. Even the American channels got in touch with me in one thing or another. So from there on, I mean, that as far as name was concerned, I'd made my name. But he was lucky in as much that I could drive.
Who was navigating with you at the stage?
Well, I had various navigators through the years until I got a girl called Alice Watson. She was my Glasgow Alice and she was absolutely wonderful. And then after that, I had Pauline Gullick, who is still rallying, actually. But some of the navigators weren't as good as they could have been, mm-hmm. unfortunately.
Tell us about the 65 Tulip Rally. Now, that's the one big international event that you won in the mid-60s. Mm. How big a rally was that? Just tell us about that.
Oh, it was enormous. I mean, it was a world championship event. Now, they weren't in those days called, they were called European championship events. But, you know, they were very large. And it started in a place called Noordwijk in Holland. And, I mean, we went out. It was just another event to us. The IMPS had only just come into being at that stage. And, you know, we'd always done, you know, from the time they came out quite well. But people really laughed at them. They called them tin boxes. And, of course, the engine was the wrong end. And, you know, they slid off the road and they did all sorts of things. I loved them. I still love them. What nobody had banked on was that it was going to snow the entire way. And it was very difficult. It got one of the particular calls we went up. It was so steep that the little car wouldn't go any further. So my unfortunate co-driver in those days was a guy called Val Domlio. And I said to Val, get out and sit in the boot, put the weight in the rear end, even though the engine was the rear end as well, but I didn't care. Sit on it. And this girl, she got out and she sat and she clung on to the boot lid and bounced the whole way up. And we passed everything from Porsches to Fords to you name it until we got to the top of that col. And then once we got going down the far side, I stopped and she got off the boot. Well, she tried to get off the boot, but her hands were frozen solid around the edge of the boot lid. But it got her back in the car. And even with the fact that she was crying from the pain of her hands, she was still navigating. And we eventually got back into Noordwijk. About 11 o'clock that night, the phone rang. And this voice said, oh, Miss Mead, you have won the rally. And my answer was, yeah. I'd learned a few swear words at that stage. And that was it. And I said, oh, would you go away and stop annoying? Put down the phone. It rang again. Put it down. Rang again. And then there was banging on the door. And opened the door. And Norman was there. And there were quite a few of the team there. And loads of other people pressed and everything else. And they said, you've won. You've won. But after that, then, when I did other events, I drove for Porsche for a few big international rallies. And I was lying second overall to a man called Toivonen, Paul O'Toivonen. And then a lot of the events like the Circuit of Ireland, the Scottish, these things, I was always in the top, like, say, three. And I won outright quite a few of the Irish national events.
You were competing against some of the world's top drivers at that stage.
Yeah.
Stig Blomqvist, I suppose, would have been around. Paddy Auricola, maybe Roger Clark.
Yes, Roger, Paddy Hopkirk, Timo Mäkinen, Rauno Altonen. You just name it. They were all there, including, of course, Pat Moss.
And rally aficionados would roll those names off the tongue. And you were part of that group. You must be very proud of it, too, now, looking back.
Looking back on it, yeah, it was great. I mean, it was a great life. There's no two ways about it. I did go racing. I mean, I went to America and I raced in America for about 2 or 3 years and had a wonderful time over there, and then went down to Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, you name it. Like, I've been there and I've rallied or raced in all these countries. And the nice thing about it is I'm still invited to do them. I mean, obviously on a more laid back sort of scenario now, naturally.
If you had a choice, if somebody said to you, which was the best, rallying or circuit racing, what would you
do? Oh, rallying. Rallying every time.
Ireland became a place, and one particular place as well, synonymous with the Irish land speed record as well, which you held, the Carrigrohane Straight in Cork. And it became really synonymous with people trying that, not just with cars, but with bikes as well. And you held the Irish land speed record for one time. When did that happen?
I think that was about 1975, 76, something like that. Danny Keeney on a motorbike, on a Yamaha, he did it on the bike and I was doing it in the car.
Which car were you driving?
The car we got was, we had to rent a car, something that would be fast enough. And it was a Formula One car belonging to a man called Mick Hill. Oh, an enormous thing. But in fact, what it was it had a Jaguar body, a fiberglass Jaguar body, which covered in the whole of the Formula One chassis, engine and everything else. The engine was at the back. And until I started the car on the straight down in Cork that morning, I'd never sat in the car. I'd never driven the car. It was fascinating. It was actually one of the best days, I think, in all my driving career. I remember that so well. I think my highest speed was about 190-something. I can't actually remember, but that was it.
And that was the mid-70s. You said how far after that then did you continue your racing career?
Well, I raced. I had my own cars, the Escorts, which were brilliant. And I won the British Saloon Car Championship 3 years on the trot. And then after that, I got drives with people like Porsche, Lancia. Then I did a few I did the Safari. And I really only gave it up sometime around the mid-80s up to early 90s. And then I got bitten by the bug again. And I had the little 205 Peugeot, and I used to take it to Mondello. I had that. It was the Tulip Computer sponsored that for a number of years. Of course, all the classic and historic rallying started again. And then I was asked again over the continent. Most of the lads that I actually rallied with way back then, they're all doing it again now.
You were inducted into the Motorsport Ireland Hall of Fame. It's a new award, well, a relatively recent award. How much of an honour was that from your point of view to be inducted into that Hall of Fame?
Oh, I was thrilled. I was absolutely thrilled because I always reckoned that they didn't really give me an awful lot of credit in Ireland. It was a thing like, you know, that little pretty blonde girl, you know the one I mean, that sort of thing. And I felt that this was not the general public. Now, the general public were great to me, always were. And, you know, I had my own TV show and things like that. And, no, it was good. But I felt that the drivers themselves, they sort of slightly resented, oh, how did she get a works drive? And, you know, here we have to, you know, really work for this and so on and so on and so on. So to get an award and an honour like that, I was absolutely knocked out. I thought it was wonderful.
You are still involved in motorsport in one way or another. You get invites. But there's a program you set up a couple of years ago for transition students called Think Awareness Campaign. Just tell us a bit about that.
Well, that is something that I saw in America, first of all. And the carnage on our roads is so bad for such a small country per capita. It's really appalling. It's the 17 to 25-year-olds who are the most vulnerable. And out of that, it's the young men. But if you can't get to them and you can't train them, you're still going to go on having just as much carnage as we have been having.
Have you enjoyed basically your life as a racing driver?
Thoroughly.
And your life in general?
Thoroughly. Thoroughly. My private life has never been hectic, but that's nothing to do with anything. Well, I suppose it had in a way, because when I was, you know, driving professionally, I was always away. And it's very hard for marriage to survive if somebody is away sort of about 8 months of every year and you come back and you're talking about all these different people who in those days were household names. And, you know, the person you're married to doesn't really know anything about it. And why are we talking about that one? And what's that one to you? And so on and so on. And it doesn't tend to be the ideal situation. So from that point of view, but in general, yes, I have enjoyed every moment of it. But my priority now is the teaching. And that is really where my heart is at the moment and, you know, has been for the last 9 years.
Rosemary Smith, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next week on Ireland's Motorsport Legends, Michael Rowe.
Yeah, the biggest thing in the festival was getting through the heats. You had to be careful not to get knocked out. Heats, quarterfinal, semi-final, final. So in the early stages, you had to be very careful to try and finish in the top four without damage. And that was the key to win the festival, being careful and measured early on in the races. I knew I was going to win it. We had everything right. The car was right. So I was very confident I was going to win it.